100 days, 100 nights to know a man's heart. 100 days, 100 nights to know.
Boy, I'll tell you, our theme song for the week, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, 100 days, 100 nights, our 100 days of the Trump administration. Sharon Jones, who is a phenomenal artist, passed away not long ago. It's been a real thrill to have her music take us through the first 100 days of the Trump administration. I'm going to miss that song next week. We're joined today of a really interesting show, I think, lined up for you. Kyle Wingfield, a columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is here. You see his column on the in the Thursday and Sunday newspapers, which means you're either finished with a column or still writing. What's your story? What are you writing about for this week?
For Sunday's column is about education accountability and how some of these metrics we have don't really tell you what maybe you think you're seeing.
Okay,
you
know? I'm sure you're done. This is Friday afternoon. Better have that column
it's
in.
It's long done.
All right. And we're joined today. I'm really glad to have Public Service Commission member Tim Echols here. Tim, you're a pretty devoted listener to Political Rewind, and you certainly tweet us all the time. It's nice to actually have you here in person.
Yeah, I wish you had an electric car charger. I had to park over at Georgia Tech off First today, and I walked about 8/10 of a mile to get here. We got to get an electric car charger at this place. Use my pledge
Tay Ryan if she can make that happen for you. Just a couple of quick news items before we start our conversation. Of course, President Trump is in town, and we're going to get to that. But I think it's important to point out that with the NRA also in town, it's beginning to look as if Governor Deal, he's not going to make a decision before the NRA leaves town, but he appears much more prepared to sign this bill. He told the AJC that this is a significantly different campus carry bill than the proposal he vetoed last year. So I think most people are prepared to have him approve that bill. Jody Heiss was the only member of the Georgia congressional delegation who had said he wasn't sure whether he was going to vote for that first repeal and replace on health care. He's now saying that he's prepared to go along with whatever the final bill is proposed by the Republicans in the House, but we don't really quite know yet what that's going to be. And finally, it turns out, reported by the AJC, reported by the New York Times and the Washington Post, Donald Trump a couple days ago tweeted that he was ready to pull out of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And it turns out, in reporting today, we learned that Sonny Perdue, as Agriculture Secretary, was one of the people who went to the president with a map of the United States and said, here are the states that voted for you, and here are the states that have significant agriculture, and if you do this, if you just back out, it's going to hurt those states significantly. And partly because of that, the president's now saying he's going to renegotiate. All right, so President Trump, Kyle, you were there, and we're going to talk later about the president, but while you were there at the NRA during his speech, just to give you a sample of the sort of things we'll talk about later, the president did give a pretty ringing endorsement of Karen Handel, the Republican candidate in the 6th District.
I'd also like to congratulate Karen Handel on her incredible fight in Georgia 6. The election takes place on June 20th, and by the way, on primaries, let's not have 11 Republicans running for the same position again. It's too nerve-shattering. She's totally for the NRA, and she's totally for the Second Amendment, so get out and vote. You know, she's running against someone who's going to raise your taxes to the sky, destroy your health care, and he's for open borders, lots of crime, and he's not even able to vote in the district that he's running in.
President Trump, we're going to talk about his day. Right now, he should be in the middle of a fundraiser for Karen Handel. But Tim Echols, because we have you here, and we're really grateful that you came in, let's talk about this crisis that the state, really all of us, are facing in terms of the construction of the new Plant Vogtle nuclear reactors. In a nutshell, the contractor was Westinghouse. Westinghouse has gone into bankruptcy, and there are questions right now as to how the rest of this project is going to be built. We expect that Georgia Power is going to become its own contractor, right?
Maybe.
Okay, maybe. But there are questions about what kind of overruns this is going to lead to, how much taxpayers are going to be asked, or rather Georgia Power consumers are going to be asked to pay, and perhaps taxpayers as well. So we should start breaking that down a little. Mm-hmm. But one quick question. It's my understanding that today has been a deadline. Mm-hmm. Westinghouse had agreed to continue paying workers on the site through at least today, and then there was going to be some renegotiation of that. Was their deadline actually today, and has it been dealt with?
Yeah, that's not exactly the situation. Okay. The deadline is tonight at 11:59, right? So Georgia Power has actually been paying over this last 30-day
period. Oh, Georgia Power has.
Yeah, Georgia Power has been paying. So they've really been in a time and materials type contract. Before it was fixed and firmed. Now they're paying on their own. They don't have to ask the commission permission to do this. What they have to ask us for is getting the rate payers to pay for anything, right? So tonight we'll hear whether Westinghouse is going to abandon the project or honor their contract. That will change everything depending on what happens. So we'll find out tonight at 11:59.
Why will that change everything?
Well, if they abandon the project, it triggers a parental guarantee that the parent company of Westinghouse, Toshiba, large Japanese company, 167,000 employees, maybe too big to fail. In fact, I was in Washington yesterday. I asked four Japanese businessmen, each individually, do you think Toshiba will bankrupt? They all said no, that this is the pride of Japan. So that's good news for us because we need that guarantee. That guarantee is worth probably to the plant $3.6 billion, just to Georgia Power ratepayers, $1.68 billion. And we need that money, that check from Toshiba, to kind of make up for some of the other losses that we've had.
Kyle, one of the reasons that we all have a stake, or those of us who are Georgia Power customers have a stake in this, is a bill that was passed in 2009, Senate Bill 31.
That's correct.
Which put us on the hook for a lot of these costs, yes?
Yeah, that's my understanding. That was a little bit before I got to Georgia, and so I wasn't here for that debate. But that's the one that kind of allowed this project to go forward on the basis that we now know it.
It allowed ratepayers to be charged the interest
in
advance.
So, right.
So the argument in the session when they passed this was, look, it's better to pay this interest along rather than wait to the very end and have it compounded and then pile it on.
All right, so it kicked in 2011, and since 2011, and one of the reasons there's some concern about what's happening right now is that since 2011, Georgia Power customers have been paying for a plant that, as of today, we can't even be certain will be completed. Is that fair?
And that is fair, and it was the argument on the other side that, look, why should an elderly person who is, in their 70s or 80s, who may never see, or experience a single kilowatt from this plant, why should they pay in advance for it? That was kind of the argument that I ran on that in 2010. I was out of my three opponents, I was the only one against the pre-charge. And I think the average Georgian gets that. But it was passed in the legislature. It's a done deal. It's water over the bridge. And they've been charging that up until December when we froze that amount. Bubba McDonald said,
One of your fellow commissioners.
One of my fellow commissioners said, you know what, let's freeze this. We don't want it to grow anymore. And so that fund is frozen. People are still paying for it, but it's not growing anymore until the plant's finished.
So one question that comes to mind for me, and you mentioned that, this is worth $3.6 billion or $1.68 billion. That means if it doesn't come through, that's got to come from someone else.
And we're going to talk about that.
That's
that
right.
Sets us up.
That's right.
Because we do have to go. This is a final day of GPB's pledge. And Tim, you came in here with a check in your hand. We're going to give you about 15 seconds before we throw it to our team in the other studio.
Yeah, I brought my pledge in today, and I want to challenge all elected officials to match me. I'm going to give $120 one time or $10 a month. I want to challenge you to match me. You can give it from your campaign fund. This is a nonprofit organization. And Wendy and I we've written this check, and we want to challenge you to join us.
I don't know how we can do much better than that. Tanya Ott, I know you're over there ready to pick up where we left off. And I was thrilled that you said in the newsroom beforehand you were going to finish up your time doing this pledge drive on our show. It's all yours. Welcome back. With us today, Kyle Wingfield, a columnist, one of the conservative columnists for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Public Service Commissioner Tim Echols, and Michael Owens, the Democratic Party chair out in Cobb County, stuck first in traffic coming in here. Why don't you guys get MARTA up in Cobb County, for goodness sake?
I'm not going to argue with that at all.
And then stuck out at our lobby. Thank you. I'm so glad you were able to finally make your way in here, Michael.
Happy to be here.
So, Kyle, before we went into the pledge break, you asked a really important question of Commissioner Echols.
Right. So Tim had mentioned that, the backstop by Toshiba, the parent company of Westinghouse, is worth $3.6 billion, and specifically $1.68 billion to Georgia Power ratepayers. And so the question is, if they don't come through with that, because that's obviously the dilemma we're facing here, then who else might be asked to foot that bill?
Yeah, so that's going to fit into the whole calculus for the project, right? When Georgia Power comes to the commissioners, whether that's in 30 days or 60 days, and says, commissioners, it's going to take X to finish it. And because Toshiba is providing a backstop, that's reduced by this amount. Or because they're not, it's going to escalate to that. And then the commissioners are going to have to decide, are we willing to commit the ratepayers' money that far into this? And I don't know what that magic number is. I don't know how far my colleagues will go. I know that they've been around a long time. Two of them are up for re-election next year. Two of them are retiring 2020. So I'm not sure how far they'll go, but I think there is a point where we won't go.
How much money are ratepayers right now paying as a result of that 2009 legislation?
Well, we estimate, we had estimated the total bill to jump 6 to 12% once it all get puts in rates. So we have been paying interest on the project, on the bills, and it depends on the average ratepayer. Most people on their bill is $4, $5, $6 a month, something like that. It is significant. But I think what we're hired to do at the commission by the voters is to look out 40, 60, 80 years and make sure that Georgia has the energy that it needs, that is cheap enough, that it attracts business, not like in Germany where their bills are three times what ours is. Japanese, they're using 95% fossil fuel now because they shut all their reactors down. And, this is a carbon-constrained world. We're moving away from fossil fuels, and we need this nuclear plant, I think, to be able to continue with these goals that we have.
So you made a stealth mission, an individual mission, without having talked to anybody else about it, to Texas the other day. What were you doing, and why did you go?
Well, I technically did talk to our chairman, Commissioner Wise, and let him know I was going.
I'm not trying to make it sound like you were being in any way inappropriate.
Yeah. So I went to Earth Day in Dallas because Rick Perry was going to be there. It's his home state.
In charge of the Energy Department.
Yeah. And Scott Pruitt, the EPA administrator, was going to do an evening event. So I had a chance to get with him and staff members. And I really didn't want to miss the opportunity to let Secretary Perry know that there was a point where our commissioners might not go. And that if the Trump administration, if they were really committed to nuclear power, I wanted to implore them to consider all options before them. And I don't know all the tools the president has in his toolbox, but I know that he has a diplomatic relationship with Japan, and Toshiba is the parent company. They're located there. And the most harm that can come to our ratepayers is with a Toshiba bankruptcy. And so
talking about a federal bailout, perhaps?
No, I didn't say bailout. I didn't ask for a bailout. I just said assistance. I said assistance.
I mean, to be clear, this this project has a federal loan guarantee. Uh-huh. I mean, is that something that we're talking about kicking in the instance of a Toshiba bankruptcy?
No, I don't think. I mean, Georgia Power is going to pay the loan back. I mean, they're not going to default on the loan. That's not going to happen.
Well, so how much? What's the amount of the loan?
We've got a credit line up to about $8 billion. So we've still got quite a bit. But think about this. We don't have a risk premium on the loan. South Carolina is now having to pay a risk premium going to Wall Street and getting their money in increments.
Because they, too, are in the same position where they have reactors that they're not getting built because the Westinghouse is the contractor there as well.
Yeah, we got the federal government riding shotgun on our project, and I wanted to awake the sleeping giant. And I think Rick Perry has an enormous amount of influence, and he just needed to know.
Michael, is this going to be an issue in 2018 races? Tim did say there are public service commissioners who are up for re-election. You are not one of them in 2018. Also, Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle was one of the people who supported that legislation in 2009, SB 31. He's running for governor. Can you imagine this becoming an issue in the governor's race, even though in the long run, governors don't have a whole lot of control over what happens in this?
Well, we all know that when running for office, you know, people are going to want to know and get answers to issues that you may not be able to be in your wheelhouse as an elected official. So while it may not be, you know, on the governor's front doorstep, it's going to be an item of discussion. And I think with Lieutenant Governor's past role in this, I mean, obviously that even drags it more into the governor's race as well. But I think it is going to be on the minds of voters, specifically because we spent a lot of money. I mean, you just talked about, Mr. Echo, Commissioner, about you know, ratepayers have already been paying this, right? So now it's like it's in limbo. Where is it going to go? And the number one thing people want to know is that their elected officials are looking out for them. So when you have a situation like this where they've been making these payments and now we're not quite sure who's going to fit the bill or it just goes away, I think that could be a major issue this year, coming year.
Is there a question as to whether these new facilities will, in fact, ever actually be built? Am I correct that if Georgia Power were to say we're stopping construction, then all of the ratepayers' money and all that, they lose all that, don't they, Tim? Am I getting that wrong?
The sunk cost, the money already spent,
yes,
if we were to abandon the project, as long as the commission said that the expenses were, the legal term is prudent, in other words, there's no foul play, there's no lying going on, there's no cheating, and I don't think there has been, they would be eligible to receive all of that.
They would. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to have to take a break. But when we come back, one little more about this, because, Kyle, one of the things that's fascinating here is we sort of alluded to it. There are now two nuclear power projects in the United States under construction, South Carolina and Georgia. And if for some reason the Westinghouse bankruptcy means that they are both abandoned, there may be no immediate future for any nuclear power in the United States. That's the thesis. We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back from this pledge break, and then we'll move on to Donald Trump in Atlanta. Let me send it back over to Tanya Ott, who wants to tell you how important it is you support not just this program, but everything we're doing here at GPB. Welcome back. Kyle Wingfield of the AJC, Michael Owens, chair of the Cobb County Democratic Party, and Public Service Commissioner Tim Echols are still in the studio. A couple quick notes. Last night, we brought together our voter panel, our citizen panel again, and oh my gosh, they've gotten a lot feistier with each other than they've been in the past. We had a terrific session with them, I think. We're going to air it Monday at 2 o'clock, and I think you'll definitely want to tune in for that show. It was a lot of fun. Tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Tim, Kyle, Michael, Sam Burnham tweets, "So it wasn't enough that taxpayer money was used to bail out American businesses. Now we have to bail out Japanese companies, too. But it's, in fact, Japanese who are going to have to do the bailout of Toshiba, right?"
Yeah, I'm hoping that diplomatic pressure from all sides will be put on Japan so that Toshiba does make right by this contract. And I mean, the Japanese are honorable people. I think they want to do the right thing. I mean, think about it. Toshiba's about to sell their chip business. That's the equivalent of their right arm.
All right.
They're cutting it off. And I believe they're going to honor this, and I believe they're going to come through.
Okay. All right. One last item on this, and let's move on to President Trump's visit today. Kyle, it's interesting because there are only two nuclear power projects in the United States, South Carolina and Georgia. No others are either under construction or, to the best of my knowledge, really being contemplated at this point, which means if these fail, if they don't happen, there is no future in the long term for nuclear power, new nuclear power facilities in the United States.
Well, and compounding that, there hasn't been a recent past in this either. I mean, these are the first reactors in 30 years to be built in the United States. So, there was a piece actually in Forbes this week by a couple of UGA professors, David Gaddy and Scott Jones, and they were arguing, and not really the specifics of what to do in the case of Vogtle, but really more the big picture, because nuclear is also questioned as an energy source by some environmentalists and some others. So, and one of their arguments, which I thought was pretty persuasive, is it would be a mistake for the United States to only be in the business of nuclear insofar as it goes to military purposes, that the knowledge base and the wherewithal to harness this energy would really take a huge hit, and we're already lagging a little bit behind some of the rest of the world. And who would step into that vacuum? Because it's not like the rest of the world is going to step away. It would be countries like China and Russia that we would, often be at cross purposes with geopolitically.
Tim, real quick before we move on. Natural gas has already undermined, no pun intended, coal production. I mean, natural gas has become a cheaper and more prolific source of energy than coal. Is it true that it also really eclipses nuclear as well?
Yeah, not so much in the South, but when you're in those merchant plants, like in Vermont, the Vermont Yankee plant, or in Massachusetts with the Pilgrim plant, those things have closed because they couldn't compete against cheap natural gas and subsidized wind power with the wind production tax credit.
Right.
So here are perfectly efficient plants with never an accident in their history, and they've had to shut down. So, and I'm sure that hasn't missed, Rick Perry's radar screen.
Right. Okay.
So it's not just that existing nuclear is having a problem, but we can't get ours built here.
All right, we're going to move on. But we know this issue is going to continue to be something we'll talk about, and we'll keep you in the loop. You should come back, and we'll continue this conversation as developments unfold. How's that?
That sounds good.
Okay. President Trump in town. Kyle, you were down there at the World Congress Center where he appeared in front of the 80,000 members or the 80,000 people gathered at the NRA convention. Was it a good speech?
With the caveat, I ducked out about 5 minutes early or five minutes before he ended so I could make sure I got here.
Okay.
It was very vintage Trump, I would say. He did start off those remarks we played at the beginning of the program about Karen Handel. Those were virtually the first things he said on the stage. So he hit that, and then he reminded us of the states he won in November, and he went through them. He did not name Georgia, although he did win Georgia. And then he sort of talked about how important the NRA's support had been to that, and he made clear that he is going to be a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, that there will be no reason for the NRA to look to other candidates in 2020, and including he took a shot at Elizabeth Warren, referred to her as Pocahontas,
Michael,
one more time.
Yeah, I was watching the speech here in my office, and I was struck by that. I mean, this was sort of a campaign. This was back to the rally days for Trump in some ways. And the fact that he felt it was necessary to call her Pocahontas to conjure that whole thing up again, it's just really, again, what makes him such an unusual guy out there.
It makes him, it's a bit of an enigma, but what you see with Trump is he sticks to what he's comfortable with, right? And these rally type things, and throw in the jabs, that's what he's comfortable with. And quite honestly, at this point, he feels like that's what won him the election. So why stop now? I mean,
exactly.
Immediately after he got elected, I mean, he kept on the campaign trail, if you will, right? I mean, the successive rallies that he had. So when we see him in this form, that's Trump. That's what he's comfortable with. That's what he does. So, I mean, that's basically what we expect now.
And Bill, you mentioned the 80,000 attending the convention over the course of the weekend. But I was told there were almost 9,000 in the convention hall for today's speech. It was a very large crowd.
Wow.
That aspect of campaigning that he obviously enjoyed very much was there again.
Tim, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Tim, Pocahontas, I wonder when you've got a hot congressional race going on, whether or not when the president of the United States starts using that kind of rhetoric again here where that race is unfolding, whether that just doesn't really fire up Democrats even more in their effort to try to send a message to Donald Trump. Now, his endorsement, ringing endorsement of Karen Handel may have the same effect on her voters. Don't know, but it's got to inflame the Democratic voters, too.
Well, certainly, you know, the whole video deal during the campaign, I think, really hurt him with 6th district voters. But I think with Karen being a female and having, having experience, and Republicans are comfortable with her, she's a known commodity, I really think she probably is able to get around these issues that he may be having with offending people, you know, with his rhetoric. I think she probably escapes that.
Oh, I'm sure she does, but I think Democrats get excited about going out and sending him a message. All right, we're going to take another break. This is my last chance, really, to remind you that we rely on you. I mean, you are the people who have said you want to hear Political Rewind not once a week, not twice a week, 3 times a week. That's added to the amount of work that we do, which we love doing. It means we've expanded our staff to accommodate 3 shows a week. Maybe we'll be doing more expansion in the near future. Who knows? But you are our listeners and supporters, and we rely on you. If you've already given to us this pledge drive, I can't thank you enough. It's really helpful and meaningful. If you haven't, you've got a little time left, and Tanya Ott's going to tell you what to do. We're back. Cobb County Democratic Party Chairman Michael Owens. There's probably no doubt that Donald Trump, the fundraiser today that Donald Trump is heading for Karen Handel, will bring in a lot of money. She's done well. She got $3.5 million the other day from a super PAC. The Georgia Chamber, without telling us how much they're going to give, has given her some money. She's going to have all the money she needs, as is John Ossoff.
Right.
But here's the question. She couldn't turn her back on President Trump because, after all, he's the Republican president. And if she had, the front page of the AJC would say Karen Handel stiffed the president. But in the long run, who gets the advantage of her closeness to him today? Your side or theirs?
I think the Democratic Party, John Ossoff's campaign, and the people in the 6th district get the advantage.
Well, but is this going to help Ossoff? Is this going to help energize the anti-Trump voters up there?
Yeah, I think without a doubt. I mean, that is something, I've made no secret about it before being on the show, that was kind of, you know, our scenario. If it had to go to a runoff, that it would be against Karen Handel and Trump would come stump for. I mean, it's you know, when you look at just the pure campaign numbers and you look at the past election and the, you know, let's just say, Donald Trump did win the 6th district, but it was the smallest lead of any congressional district in the state that he actually won, right? We've talked about before about the slim odds that he won. And it hasn't gotten any better, I don't think, in this first 100 days in office, where you're going to have people that didn't vote for him decide that they are, right? I don't think his 100 days has been that transformational. I think it's potentially been the exact opposite. So, you know, with him coming down and stumping for Karen Handel, I don't know on the conservative operative side, but that's definitely something I wouldn't have advised.
So on the other hand, Kyle, it has been noted that even though Ossoff did pretty well, 48%+ of the vote, he really didn't enlarge the votes for Democrats much from November till now. It's like 1% better than Hillary Clinton had done. And so that doesn't bode well for the anti-Trump side, does it?
Yeah, you know, I think for Republicans, Trump is still a little bit of give and take, right? I mean, and where he gives are those states in the Midwest where Republicans won for the first time in many, many years in some cases. And where he takes is in some of the margins that they had more in districts like Georgia 6, right? Now, what we haven't seen yet is that sort of polarization that he creates among voters, bringing bringing both parties toward 50%, you know, whether that's to their gain or their detriment. We haven't seen it cost the Republicans an election yet. And so, you know, that's what I'm waiting to see is whether there's a ceiling to the amount of distaste, you know, the cost of that distaste for Republicans.
I think that's right. Tim, I thought one of the most interesting headlines I've seen in Politico, which is certainly a left-leaning blog or website, was when are Democrats going to actually start winning? I mean, we've got a lot of attention to the fact they're coming close, but they haven't been winning. You are one of Karen Handel, or you say you contributed to her at the very beginning of the race. Why Karen Handel from the start?
Well, I really think both candidates are going to win here. I think Karen's going to Congress. I think she's going to win. But John Ossoff is a very sharp young man. And when you spend $8 million on Atlanta TV in the primary, and then you're going to spend another $8 million, he'll have better name ID than I do. And I think he's going to be able to parlay that, as we've seen other candidates that run for a higher office, and then maybe they step down one click or two clicks, and they run for a state senate or a state house seat, and they easily win it because their name ID is so strong. So I do think John Ossoff is going to come away from this a very well-known commodity.
It's funny, I had a conversation with somebody just this week about whether, after spending $16 million and, let's say for the sake of argument, coming close to getting elected to Congress, could he bring himself to run for a state senate or a state house seat, or will he be more tempted to run for governor or some other statewide office next year? I mean, that's going to be really fascinating to watch, again, if that's the scenario that plays out.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point there, and I think... you know, when the campaign's on, you don't want to let your mind go there. You're down the tunnel of winning an election. But I think it's something that would be prudent to look at. And the fact that the amount of money that he was able to raise, right, wins any other election pretty much in the state you want to throw at it. So I think that's very curious. But the other aspect of this is not, you know, to your point, Bill, about when Democrats will start winning. But when they do, how many seats they will start with?
Yeah,
right. Because there's a wave, there's a tidal going on, and it's slow to some extent, but it's really accelerated right over this last year and a half. And I'm just really anxious, excited to see how fast that's going to go, or will that continue? I don't think we crest yet. I think, you know, the idea with this being a special election, we all know it's about turnout. So it's not even to me about, you know, have we maximized that? It's you know, are we going to keep that motivation and the excitement enough to bring enough people to the polls to actually win?
And for Republicans, the one thing they could do to match that again, which they did very well, I thought, in the first round, is get a couple of bills passed.
Well,
at least out of the House.
Thank you.
In Congress.
Thank you. Because you led me into the way I'd like to close today's show, Kyle. By the way, Kyle Wingfield, AJC, his column will be in Sunday's paper. It'll be in next Thursday's paper as well. Michael Owens, chair of the Cobb County Democratic Party, and Tim Echols, public service commissioner. I really appreciate all of your being here today. We didn't talk about the Trump's first 100 days today because we had other things that really commanded our attention. But that's what our panel talks about on Monday. You will be, I think, fascinated by how they discuss the successes and failures of the Trump administration. And here's a big surprise. The really adamant pro-Trumpers think he's been doing phenomenally well, and the people who don't like him really think he's been terrible.
Surprise,
the way they talk about it that I think you're going to find really, really fascinating. The Trump First 100 Days in our citizen panel on Monday at 2 o'clock. On Wednesday at 2 o'clock, another very special show, we're going to be talking with author John A. Farrell. His biography, Richard Nixon, the Life, has gotten tremendous reviews. We're going to have him on the show, along with John Pruitt, my old colleague from Channel 2, one of the really great political reporters in Georgia over the years. That's Wednesday at 2. We're out of here. I'm Bill Nygut. If you haven't contributed, we'd really like your support on this final day of our pledge drive. Look at us at Politics GPB to keep the conversation going. Tanya Ott, it's all yours.